Ladies and gentlemen of the jury.
Live from the Battle Born Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN, Las Vegas.
Just got done talking to John Von Tobel. Want to remind you, we got two great shows going on the weekends. Sunday football preview show has been going on for 15 plus years, hosted by a cavalcade of stars over the years. That's 8 o'clock on Sunday morning at the Superbook. I'll be out there hosting, at least at the start of the season, with John Murray at the Westgate. And then JBT has a Saturday show. Listen, their super contests are both worth getting into. The college super contest is new. $500 to get in. 7 games against the spread. 10 winner payout. You said you're in it or you're getting in it? Because you got to get in it like now.
That's right. I looked up to double check. So I was going to go Friday, but it is by 3 p.m. So yes. I'm going tomorrow, Thursday. I'll be there.
So get on over to Westgate and some cool things they're offering now. If you want to sit in, if you don't go to Football Central, you want to sit in a VIP booth. It's just $200 for a VIP booth at Westgate Superbook. It's just $100 for a VIP pod. They're also going to have some reduced juice on college games at minus 109, NFL games at minus 108. And then how about this? Las Vegas Casino, dollar beers on Monday and Thursday night for the game. So Westgate doing it up with the Superbook and John Von Tobel on Saturdays, and we'll be out there on Sundays as well. Gooch from Comp will be out there on those Sundays. So we were just talking about the Chiefs. Alex White is here. Alexander White is here with Cofield. We were talking about the Chiefs joking that we need to fade them now that Kelce and Swift are engaged. Well, we did get real football news on the field, and Rashee Rice is going to be out again. For how long?
Yes, he is. 6 games, and it was looking like at first it was they didn't really know which games, but it's going to be at the start of the season now, and it is a tough stretch that they have. So I didn't really factor that in, but going through and, you know, kind of doing each team and their win total and if they'd be favored or not, I still had the Chiefs like, you know, 11 win team, maybe 12, but this makes it a little bit more difficult. That's why I am kind of not joking that the Chargers or the Broncos, which I actually like the Broncos, could actually compete for the division. I don't think the Chiefs aren't going to make the playoffs. I think they could get a wild card spot here.
I was bullish on the Chargers. I don't like the way the offseason has started. I'm sorry. The preseason has started with their left tackle Slater going down. I think they have a weakness now at right tackle. And Najee Harris will not be ready for the beginning of the year. I think Hampton can be really good, but is he ready to be a bell cow? And we know that Harbaugh wants to run the ball.
Right.
And you could go back to a style where Herbert's whipping it around 37, 45 times. Is this receiving core ready to take a step up? They do have reinforcements. I'm not talking about Keenan Allen, but some of the draft picks they made, and as they call him down there, Ladd McConkey, Ladidi, he's probably primed for the next step as a legit number one. But is that going to cover for those injuries? Najee Harris, self-inflicted. Or maybe it wasn't. I don't know. Someone fired off a firework into his face. I'm not going to say self-inflicted, but...
But he is off the injured list, right? So, but he won't be ready for week one. But they're just kind of hoping soon.
I don't know. Do you think he's going to be ready? I mean,
no.
Would you bank on it?
No, I wouldn't bank on it. You're right.
That doesn't mean he's not going to be productive at some point during the season, but I don't like the way this whole thing's beginning for the Chargers. That Chiefs schedule you mentioned, very difficult at the beginning of the season. They come out of the gates with Chargers.
Which is international game.
Brazil.
Thank you. There's so many. They're going so many different places now.
Eagles, Giants. We talked last week about the Giants. We both think the Giants are going to be a little better than people are giving them credit for. 5.5 win total. I think they're going to go over that. Ravens, the much improved Jaguars? No?
I'm not very high on the Jags.
Okay.
I think it's going to take some time for Liam Cohen to work his magic there. A lot of people are just banking on Trevor Lawrence having an outstanding year, but it's more their defense, too. Let's be honest. It was a bottom of the league defense last year.
Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce engagement, plus Rashee Rice now down for 6 games. Miles Simmons, Pro Football Talk. Chiefs win what? 7 games this year? We got to fade them.
Yeah. Fade the hell out of them, right? You know.
Do you want to take the bet on the other side? You should book it.
Yeah.
If I want to go over under 7 wins, you should book it. Take the over.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I'm absolutely taking the over. The thing about the Chiefs, man, and you guys know this. Like, until somebody knocks them off, I can't pick against them. How am I going to do it? You know, every year Patrick Mahomes has had that team finish at worst. Overtime in the AFC Championship game. That's ridiculous. This has been happening since 2018. So, I mean, I have no reason to think that the Chiefs will take a step back. Like, people have been saying that they're going to take a step back for years, and they haven't done it. So, I mean, I think that they could not necessarily earn the number one overall seed this year. I think that's possible. I think they might end up with a worse record than 15-2, but I think that they'll probably be a better team. Because going into it, you have healthy wide receivers. Rashee Rice, yeah, he's going to be suspended for 6 games, but he's going to come back, and then he'll be ramped up by the time the postseason starts. So there's reason to believe that even if they don't win 15 games and secure the number one seed like they did last year, they can still go on and not just make it to the AFC Championship game, but win the Super Bowl. They've got 15 at quarterback. That's the luxury you have.
Did Swift and Kelce announce an actual date?
Not that I've seen, I guess, I don't know.
I mean, you're a wedding guy. I know you were at a wedding in France. You're very connected to very wealthy people in the Ivy League, so you know this upper crust wedding thing. For the Swift image, could she do a Bezos-like wedding and spend oodles of money, or is she worried about that being weaponized against her by folks who hate Taylor Swift, and now they're going to go economical.
Jeez. Yeah, I bet it's a little column A, little column B. You know, not only did I go to a wedding in France last year, I officiated a wedding in Santa Barbara this year. So you talk about, you know, doing the upper crust. Now, I would be surprised if it's not something that is like elaborate, but also a little bit private. Like, it's going to be a really interesting guest list, though. I mean, imagine, like, you know, she's got, you know, people like Jack Antonoff and, you know, all these other folks that, I don't know, the other people that I can't.
I was like,
right, like,
I was going to jump in, but I don't know the other people. So I was like, maybe you know. I don't know who their friends are.
Yeah. Selena Gomez, are they still friends? I don't know. But, like, you got those folks, right? And then on the other side, it's going to be, like, Jason Kelce, Patrick Mahomes. You know, like Chris Jones, Andy Reid, non-zero chance he'll be there, right? Like, it's going to be a really interesting group of people.
It sounds like it could turn out to be a pretty fun party, though. You saw Cofield.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
I want to be
people
invited.
Listening to the radio didn't see him acting like he was chugging a beer.
I was smashing
Kelce.
The beer on my head first and then kind of letting it dribble. I wanted to do that. If you noticed that Kelce dance from whatever event he was at a while back, that's gone viral again as he was going crazy. I don't know, doing the running man. And they're like, here we go. Jason Kelce at the wedding.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. He'll be lit. That's for sure.
Miles, I want to ask you about a different wide receiver. For the Raiders, actually, picking up Amari Cooper, going back to where he started. What do you think of this?
Well, technically, he's not where he started because, no, I'm just kidding. But even though it's true. I think it's a good pickup. I think Amari Cooper still has something left in the tank. I mean, looking at him last year, he was pretty unmotivated when he was playing with the Browns and Deshaun Watson because number four is bad and everybody knew it. And, you know, he made a couple plays when he got to Buffalo, but I think – when you get to a place midseason and you're unfamiliar with the system, it's hard for a receiver to pick it up, in part because it's hard for the quarterback to establish chemistry with you. So we're sort of going to see a similar kind of deal here. We'll see how he can pick things up over the course of the year with Geno Smith and with Chip Kelly and all that. But I don't see why this is a negative at all. I think Amari Cooper is somebody that's been very, very consistent. He's shown that he's got really good hands. And look, I mean, I think he's going to be somebody that can make an impact for sure.
What do you think about the Jakobi Meyers news now going into his third year of his contract, but now asking for a trade because he wants an extension. And then we hear that they are definitely not dealing him.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see if that actually comes to fruition, because I feel like if there is a team that wants to give up enough, like say a team wanted to give up a 3, you give up Jakobi Meyers for a 3. If it's potentially a low 4, then we're still having the conversation. And then also you got to think about salary and all these different considerations. So, I mean, and is a team going to be willing to just pay Jakobi Meyers on the way in the door? Why would they necessarily want to do that too? So I think it behooves the Raiders to at least say, hey, we're not interested in doing this. And Jakobi Meyers then has a decision to make. How am I going to handle this? How am I going to deal with this? But I can see it from, look, if Pete Carroll, I'll put it this way. Pete Carroll is the person who once said, we have no intention of dealing Russell Wilson. And like, what was it? 10 days later, Russell Wilson was traded to the Broncos. So even when that happens, you know, if the price is right, then the price is right.
Well, let's talk about another deal that just happened. And I would say, what are the Panthers doing? But I think I know. And they're trying to invest in their young wide receivers. And they made a trade. Adam Thielen's going back to Minnesota. And then they did not keep Hunter Renfrow. So, like I said, young wide receivers, do you agree with this? Do you like what Carolina's doing?
Well, I understand it from the standpoint of the Vikings really wanted to make it happen. And, you know, it seemed like probably Adam Thielen wanted it to happen too. He's a Minnesota guy. You know, he went to school and that state is from. So like, this makes sense from his standpoint of saying, hey, I want to go back there. Especially cause he played under Kevin O'Connell as well. You know, you've seen the success from afar. So it's nice to, you know, have a career potentially end on that kind of high note. I think they had to make it worthwhile for the Panthers in order to do this, because why would you just want to give up a guy who has been good by all accounts for a Bryce Young, who's still a young quarterback, still trying to ascend? They have a lot of work to do. I still think when it comes to creating explosive offense, let's call it that, right? The Bryce Young, I still have questions about. I just do. And like his stature, his arm strength, all of those different things. I mean, he played much, much better in the second half of the season last year, but I got to see more of that. Because what was going on in the first part of the year with Bryce Young was just that much of a disaster. So I don't know. But I think I do understand it from the Panthers' standpoint. You don't necessarily want a guy who is dreaming of going home on your team and to prevent him from doing that. Again, they had to make it worth the Panthers' while, but I think it makes sense that that happened. And you mentioned Hunter Renfrow. He is certainly a candidate to either come back on their practice squad, or maybe now that Thielen is gone, he has a better chance of making it to the 53-man roster initially. So that is something interesting that the Panthers could certainly do.
Miles Simmons joins us now, Pro Football Talk. Make sure and follow him on X at Miles A. Simmons. Let's talk about a defensive player getting paid today, and that is Kyle Hamilton. I believe he is the highest paid safety now. So the Ravens made a historical four-year, $100 million contract extension. Thoughts?
I like it for the Ravens. You know, I think that he is one of the best young defensive players in the game. He's so fun to watch. If you watch Ravens games and, you know, you're looking at defense, it's like, okay, where you kind of try to identify before the snap, which I'm sure quarterbacks do too. Where is number 14 on Baltimore's defense? Because you don't necessarily know where he's going to come from. If he's going to blitz, if he's going to be dropped back in coverage, if, you know, he's going to be more or less playing run fits. So he's really exciting to watch just from that standpoint. And he really makes plays, man. So like, this makes complete and total sense to me from Baltimore's standpoint. When you have an elite player, somebody who's been an all-pro, somebody you know you're going to want to keep around for years to come, you don't mess with it. You get the job done. You sign the contract, right? Jerry Jones, are you listening? Maybe you should do this the next time you draft a really, really good defensive player. You don't just bleep around with the contract situation and then have it so that we're basically a week out and we still don't know whether or not the good defensive player is going to play because he doesn't have a contract when he should have had a contract last year. This is what the smart teams do. Right? This is why Baltimore has been competitive year in and year out, basically for the entire time that they've been in Baltimore. So like, this is, again, it's a smart decision by a smart franchise with a great player. Right? Congratulations to Kyle Hamilton for sure.
Have you finished the Cowboys documentary on Netflix?
I have not finished it yet. No, I have a few episodes left.
Just some general thoughts on, well, number one, early on, you basically see that Jerry did the same thing in some ways to Micah Parsons that he did to the great Emmitt Smith after exactly. 2 years, and actually cost himself two games at the beginning of the season, which may have been one of the final straws for Jimmy Johnson. The video they have, and you forget these things. I think I was whatever I was, 23 when this was going on.
Yeah.
Moments of Jimmy Johnson at the podium when someone asked him a question. They're like, hey, what do you think about Emmitt and the contract thing? And he's like, oh, God. Takes a deep breath, and then he's like, walks off. He's like, I can't say what I want to say. It's pretty amazing. But really, Jerry hasn't changed much. His stance on players and him being the boss is about the same as it was 32 years ago.
Exactly. And that's what the problem is, though. Yeah. I mean, you know, this is not the same deal where you've got, you know, Troy Aikman and Michael Irvin and a really and good players everywhere. Like, it's just not the same situation. And we've also got a different situation with the CBA, rookie wage scale, salary cap. All these different things are so different now than they were in the early 90s when Jerry Jones and Jimmy Johnson were putting together successful Cowboys teams. And that, to me, is the problem. You have to adapt, right? It's part of the reason why so many coaches were kind of like escorted out, right, in favor of the newer guys like the Sean McVays of the world and his coaching tree that's branched off. You know, Kyle Shanahan, the branches of his coaching tree. And one of the things that I admire the most about Pete Carroll is he has adapted. He has adjusted. It's why he was able to be so successful for so long with the Seahawks, right? I mean, you can't just keep doing the same things over and over and over again and say just because it worked before means it's going to work again. And so that's why the Cowboys are where they're at. You know, that's exactly why Micah Parsons is not signed, because Jerry thinks that he can still do the same stuff he was doing 30 years ago. It was 30 freaking years ago.
Miles Simmons with us, Pro Football Talk. All right, I saw your tweet. Is it me or has Disney started nerfing Hulu now that we all know they're going to be shutting it down? Wait, do we all know that? What the hell's going on with Hulu?
I don't know. I mean, it's been glitchy. I'm trying to watch stuff, and I can't watch the things that I need to watch. You know, whether it is like a tennis match. We've got the U.S. Open going on right now. Ben Shelton, he's either about to start playing or he already is. Glitchy. I want to see that stuff.
Oh, man. Oh, that's my TV carrier. Oh, here we go. Okay, how about this one? Florio wrote about this just a few hours ago. YouTube and Fox reach short-term extension of carriage deal. Okay, now, hold on, though. Here's my issue, because, yes, this is a good thing for fans. But yes, the way this has been maybe pushed to the finish line, you guys also had the story that the chair of the FCC, Brendan Carr, got involved and said, Google, get it done. One, I don't like big government. I thought people in charge didn't like big government. And I feel like there's an inconsistency here. Exactly. I like that you rolled your eyes. there's an inconsistency here because we're doing something for the fans and the viewers here, but we're allowing monopolies with like news stations to be, you know, owned by one group, you know, to the tune of like 400. I know I'm going really deep here. I'm a little uncomfortable with the way this is being done. You're right. In the end, we win. I mean, frankly, I don't care. I don't have YouTube TV, so I guess. But I would have gotten at some point by this nonsense that goes on all the freaking time with the carriers and the networks.
Oh, it's total nonsense. I mean, look, the biggest issue, right? I mean, I remember in 2019 when I was living in Oakland, I got PlayStation View, right? And it was $50 a month. And it was basically the same streaming service that YouTube TV is now. And plus, you got your local regional sports channels. It was amazing. I loved it. It was a fantastic product. Now, I mean, and it was a great alternative to cable. You know, if you wanted to cut the cord, that was one way you could do it. YouTube TV is almost the same price right now as Spectrum. Yep. Right. So, you know, it is cable. For by all intents and purposes, especially because you can't just go a la carte with certain things that you want. So, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, I don't really know how else to deal with it. But the thing is, to me, and this is the point that I was kind of making to Florio when we were talking about the Fox and YouTube TV carriage issue. You know, yes, YouTube and YouTube TV are Sunday Ticket carriers, and you know it wasn't going to affect Sunday Ticket. But say you're in Philadelphia and you have YouTube TV and the Eagles are playing, or they're not going to next week, but go with me. But the Eagles are going to play on Fox, right? Like, you can't watch the Eagles on Fox because it's blacked out on your YouTube TV. Now, what the hell is that about? So you can't have that if you are the NFL, and you can't have, you know, Fox being blacked out for everybody across the nation, especially in NFC markets. Like, that doesn't work. So they had to figure this out, at least on a short-term basis. I don't know exactly how short-term it is because I've been doing a couple things in the last couple hours, so I haven't seen it. But they have to be able to make this work, because otherwise the one thing that people watch on not live television, which is the NFL, does not get shown, right? This weekend, it's Fox has Ohio State, Texas. Really? That's going to get blacked out? You guys can't figure your stuff out for that? You better. So I'm glad they did.
Yep. Good for Rupert Murdoch and Fox. Miles, appreciate it. I got to get the final shot in there. Miles, appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week, buddy.
All right. Take care, y'all.
A giveaway time. Shane Gillis playing October 17th and 18th. Shane Gillis, AXS.com. He's at Resorts World Theater. AXS.com is where you can get the tickets. We got tickets right now. Griffin's going to hook you up with tickets. 364-1100, 364-1100.
Live from the Battle Born Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
We're heading towards a 7 o'clock start of the Dan Mullen Radio Show. Live at Parkway Tavern, 215 and Flamingo. You can hear it every week. Normally on Thursdays, but Friday game this week, so it's on a Wednesday. You can hear it on ESPN 1100 and 100.9 FM. Let's get you set up for the game after that. Arguably the biggest home game of the season. UCLA will be in town. We got two tickets. Allegiant Stadium, Ticketmaster.com is where you can grab the tickets. 5 o'clock start on Saturday, September 6th, UNLV and UCLA. Caller 7 right now, 364-1100, 364-1100. So your thoughts on this? The total's gone down a little bit. Do you think defensive adjustments may happen to the point where this isn't going to be a game where both teams are toiling with the 30s?
Yeah, that's where I'm leaning right now. Also, I did actually watch a lot of that Sam Houston-Western Kentucky game, and my bigger takeaway was that Western Kentucky was better than I thought. And
they're good.
Yeah, I kind of like them for that conference. Their defense was really good. But I think UNLV can definitely match that. So the offensive struggles of Sam Houston, I think kind of like you and JVT were talking about, I think UNLV figures it out, and we see much better defensive showing from them. On the other side, that does worry me a little bit. I don't, because I did like what I saw from both quarterbacks. Do we know, or we're going to see both again, I'm assuming?
Absolutely.
And maybe we'll find out more at 7.
If you won't. He's not going to say it. He's not going to say it. I think this is going to be every week. And then you can kind of judge by the split of the plays. But here's the thing. I wouldn't go off the 58-15 split from the first game. And that's what it was with Calandria and Orgy, because the Rebels trailed for most of the game. So Calandria is going to be the better thrower.
Right.
I think when they have leads, they're going to grind.
Right.
And Orgy's going to be out there. So if they get the lead in this one, you could see Orgy a lot more. If they have more effectiveness where they get down to the 12, the 10, the 8 in the red zone, that's also going to be Orgy time.
And that's going to be under.
You would think moving the clock.
If they do have the lead, that's...
I thought they were both really good in the first game. I thought their grasp of the offense was good. I like the offense they ran. Hell, they came out on the first play, and they had both of them on the field. Both Calandria and Orgy were on the field. Calandria was in the role of a wide receiver, I guess you would call it a wide receiver option, and threw a deep ball that had a little more air underneath it, but it was like, okay, they're both on the field. Here we go. And then Orgy actually played the rest of that series, and that was the series where he ran it into the end zone, got popped on the right wrist, and fumbled into the end zone, disallowing a touchdown. Dan Mullen talked yesterday at his press conference, and 38-31 game. They were down for much of the game, and he was really proud about how the guys stuck together in a first tilt where most of the team are new players and haven't played together.
You have all of these new faces, basically an entire – I mean, almost a new roster, new coaching staff, all of that stuff. And in a scenario that we were in a tight scenario, the mindset, the attitude, the effort of the players, I couldn't have been more pleased, because that could have gone, those guys could have started pointing fingers and saying, hey, well, you do your job, I do my job. They stuck together and glued together as a team, which you don't like. I mean, that's the one that I took away from the game, that we're in a scenario where with all the new faces, all the new coming together and immediately thrown into a very difficult situation that I think would be very easy to fracture people apart, actually pulled everybody together more. And I thought that was really positive.
I agree. And John Von Tobel last hour was asking me about the sidelines. I really haven't talked about the sidelines much. It was mostly cohesive. There was not a lot of flipping out. Maybe one or two where guys were worked up. You can tell teams that are not on the same page and things are becoming frayed when everyone's freaking out. I will tell you, the offense is completely calm again, and that's the way it was the last couple of years. And it's because they have a good number of veterans, one, holdovers, but the veterans are transfers who are in. I also believe that because of the quarterbacks, like Calandre is really fired up, and but on the sidelines, he doesn't go crazy. Orgy's like, whatever he is, 23 going on 44 years old. And then Cam Friel, who's kind of like the mentor to every quarterback the last 4 years, is another one. He's 23 going on 44. He is so freaking calm. It's crazy. Now, on defense, they gave up a lot of yards. But in the fourth quarter, they had to make big plays. And they got some interceptions. Marcel McDuffie made a great interception in the middle of the field. But the real ball hawk was LaTerrence Welch. And Odom talked about Welch. And also talked about his interceptions that, you know, they weren't spectacular. It was just doing what you're supposed to do.
Both interceptions, just him being smart, you know, I mean, both of him interceptions were not, the ball was not being thrown to the guy he was covering. It was him understanding the scheme, him being in the right place at the right time, you know, which is the stuff that you want to see. You know, I mean, those are the good things. Those are when we talk about guys making the unspectacular plays. His interceptions weren't like you saw him leaping through the air and making a one-handed stab, like, you know, diving in front of somebody. He was in the exact right position at the right time, playing good football, and makes the play that is there to be made. And we talk to our guys a lot about that, of making sure just do your job, you know, do 11 guys out there just doing your job. And we showed a bunch of clips, and, you know, I mean, like the interceptions were 11 guys doing their job, and all of a sudden, we end up with some interceptions.
And I'm not worried about the defensive backfield. I took a couple of shots on social media because in the preseason I said that's going to be the strongest part of the defense, and then they got lit up pretty good. They were down a couple of players, miscommunication here and there. Denver Harris is playing kind of dinged up. Sounds like a lot of excuses, but the reason I'm not worried is a guy like LaTerrence Welch. The first time I saw him in the spring, one, good-sized guy, experience going back to playing at Arizona State, actually played a lot of special teams at LSU. So he started at LSU, then went to Arizona State, and from the get-go, I'm like, who is this guy talking to everyone, being a leader? He just got here. So you've got a couple of guys in the defensive backfield who are very vocal. Amaris Brown is another one of them. So I think they'll be able to pull it together. Again, we're headed towards the Dan Mullen Radio Show coming up at 7 o'clock. It is live over at Parkway Tavern. Remember, happy hour is going on right now. It goes on every day, 3 to 6. You can get $2 Miller Lights during the show, but their apps are 50% off during happy hour, Dynamite Special. And they've got Naked City Pizza now. You can take advantage of Chris and company at Naked City Pizza and get one of their pies, like the back home pie. On the way, Ryan McKinnells will get into combat sports and a lot more college football.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the Battle Born Broadcast Center on ESPN Las Vegas.
Back on a Wednesday, Cofield and Company. Let's bring in Big Mac, Ryan McKinnell, and we got to start with college football coming up this weekend. Your Irish are going to be on the road on Sunday taking on Miami. What do you think? They go down and spank the Canes, or are they coming home with a loss?
Well, thanks for welcoming me in here on this Wednesday there, Mr. Cofield. I love the hat you're wearing. I don't think the listeners can see it, but you're...
They will see it in post-edit when we put out videos, but yeah, wearing a hat for the Linebacker Lounge in South Bend.
Yeah, you're buttering me up. I like that. The old backer. Speaking of great bars here locally, Corby's, the world-renowned South Bend bar, just did an extension. I haven't went and checked it out after the soft opening, but South Bend is fully abuzz, man. And I know you don't want to go off of last year's work, right, on both sides of the ball when you talk about what we saw on tape with Miami and Notre Dame. I'm not going to do that, although I do think, I mean, if you compare the teams from last year, it's night and day, and obviously supremely underperforming in many ways with Miami, but they're a great program, historically speaking, and talk about historically speaking, when these two teams meet, there's always an extra, you know, semblance of pressure, right? And then you're kicking off the season, obviously, week one. It's at night. It's in prime time. It's at their home. Notre Dame has to bring everything in their arsenal that Marcus Freeman's been getting them ready for these past few weeks as we head into one really, Steve, one of the most important games on the schedule for the Fighting Irish.
MMA expert on everything. Go to his Twitter at Ryan McKinnell. It is highly entertaining. Okay, UFC Shanghai. There was a couple storylines coming out of it. I thought the saddest one was Brian Ortega. I mean, they had to fight at like 153.5 against Aljamain Sterling. He just was not competitive. What the hell is going on with this guy?
I mean, he's always every time I've ever looked at him at weigh-in day, it looks like he's battling with death. Right? I don't know.
Good walk. He couldn't walk. He was like ambling up. Like, wait, you're going to let him fight?
Yeah, of course they're going to let him fight. I mean, they're not. Fighter safety has never been a really big, sort of sticking point for the UFC. I've never felt like. But, yeah, it was unfortunate, and it was a boring fight. You know, and I like Aljamain, and I like Ortega, but the real news out of this is Ortega, after the loss, he's something like 2-5 in his last seven. I don't know. I don't have his record in front of me, but the dude is not winning, and he's still in the top 10. Like, in the official UFC rankings, it's really odd what they've got going on there. But, I didn't like it during fight week, the stuff that I was seeing from Ortega, and I certainly didn't like it inside the cage. You got to think, Steve, that he's on the last leg of his career, despite somehow being ranked in the top 10.
Ryan McKinnell, combat sport expert. So we turn to some WWE, and we like the stuff that goes on kind of outside of the ring. Is there a storyline going on right now with John Cena and kind of passing the torch? And, you know, Logan Paul has a chance to be a player in WWE. I saw a fascinating conversation where guys were talking about what Cena has done over the years and what vets do to kind of put the new guys over. Does Logan Paul have what it takes, and is Cena going to allow it, or is he getting annoyed?
Yeah, no, Baron Corbin, Bishop Dyer, I believe he's going by now, and he's a member of my extended Busted Open family, no longer on the show, but spent 5 nice years with a lot of great people over there at Busted Open. And the former Baron Corbin is a part of that show. And he talked about that, how this week, how Cena and Logan Paul had a confrontation on Monday Night Raw, right? They went back and forth. They had a promo battle. And, you know, Cena went hard at him, like used a lot of real life stuff and really, you know, basically called him a tourist, a part timer, but then also laid in a little bit thicker and got a little bit personal. Right. Ooh. And Corbin had come out of the airwaves and said, yo, that's what he does. He did it to Roman Reigns. He did it to The Miz. He did it to all these. He's done it to The Rock even. I mean, he pointed out The Rock when The Rock came back and they had their showdown about 10 plus years ago, that Rock used to put notes to his script on his wrist. He used to write notes on the inside of his wrist, and Cena called that out in the middle of a promo. He's like, yeah, well, I might be this, but at least I don't have to put notes on my, you know what I mean? Like, oof. He really pulls from realism. And again, Corbin was talking about, that's his sink or swim. Like, he is going to throw you into the fire, and he's going to mess with you, and he's going to make it as real as possible. And if you can stand and you can come back from that, like a Roman Reigns did, he really destroyed Roman Reigns. And now Roman Reigns is essentially the face of the company. Right, that he will then, if you come back from that and you show what it takes to be, you know, thick-skinned and to be able to bounce stuff back at Cena, right, then he will help hand you the keys to the kingdom. And I thought that was really poignant, that, you know, Cena, as he's doing right now with Paul, and I think most people, Cena included, in that company, think that Logan Paul is, I mean, he's already there. He's already held championships. He's already had big, you know, fights. I think he's even big matches, dances. He's also, I believe, had a couple main events. I think he might have had one in Saudi against Roman Reigns early on in his career. So they've got him hit for a pretty high trajectory. And Cena is now on his retirement tour. His last match will be done in December. He said that's his final one. He's never going to come back. He's leaving the business to the young up and comers. And Paul, whether you like him or don't like him, in my case, I do not like Logan Paul as a person, right? I just don't like him or his brother. I don't think they're very intelligent. I don't think they wield their power in ways that I would like to see a famous person do, but that's not up to me, right? I'm looking at this through a pro wrestling lens, and he is wildly talented, and Cena's working him before he goes away in December, and that makes perfect sense.
Ryan McKinnell is up on Cofield and Company. I got some NFLs. We'll go back to football here inside of 5 minutes, but you know, I'm kind of lost on the story that developed with Rampage Jackson, you know, legendary MMA fighter in Pride and in UFC. He's got a son. I saw something about a fight with a wrestler, It got really serious. Can you give us the story? Give the audience what the hell happened.
Well, this one, this story is pretty wild, right? This story centers around, as you mentioned, Rampage's son, Raja Jackson, who's a 25 years old man, but still, you know, a young man. And he was at an event with a bunch of independent wrestlers. It was like a Knox Pro show, which I believe had ties to a WWID program. Those ties have since been removed from any sort of official pages from this company, right? But yeah, it happened over the weekend. Apparently, when Raja showed up, him and this wrestler Psycho Stu had a bit of a back and forth. I don't really know the background. It seemed like the veteran Stu was kind of ramping it up and kind of playing into it. Thought maybe they were building an angle. He was kind of like working the situation because cameras were out. Because should be mentioned, Raja Jackson is a streamer. He streams on Kick, right? So This is all live, and this Stu guy didn't really know what was going on. So he kind of read it as a pro wrestling deal, and he kind of hit him in the head with this beer. Right. And Raja was obviously really upset. It took a bit of a turn when they had that initial meeting. And then it actually got pretty quickly diffused. Right. The Stu, the older wrestler, apologized, was like, yo, man, I thought we were working. I was just trying to generate interest for you. I'm so sorry. Let's do a spot tonight later at the official event where you come in, you attack me. Right. And we make something out of this. We use some of the attention that your stream got, and we you know, that's wrestler thought, right? Like, they think like that. Like, let's take an issue, let's take something from real life, and let's try to make some money off of it or generate some interest or whatever the case may be. Now, what happens between then and the actual event and what we're about to get to, this incident that happened with them, there's some snippets of video. There's really too much to go through, but it essentially felt like some of the other people around Stu and some of the wrestlers at that event told Raja to go out there and get quote unquote a receipt, right? Which is get a get back. Ooh. He hits you in the head with a beer. You go in there, you slap him around a couple times, let him know that you're no, excuse my language, you're no punk. You're no, I'm not going to say the word that I was going to say. I can stick with punk. Right. And handle this yourself. Well, the issue is he takes that too much to heart. And there is video prior to the run-in and what happens. And he's like, I'm paraphrasing here. He's literally telling the camera, this ain't no fake stuff. I'm going to go in there and I'm going to destroy this dude. I'm going to hit him so many times. I mean, he really gets into like how he's going to assault this dude. And Steve, he does. I think a lot of people have seen the video now. By now, if you haven't, don't search it out. There is no reason. People all this week, this thing that I got asked about most this week, and I just said it simple. It's one of the worst things I've ever seen on the internet. And I don't know, like, wow, how much more clear I can put that, right? Because, like, the internet's a horrific place. Like, I've seen the worst stuff I've seen is on the internet from, I'm not even going to get into it. Just really bad stuff, right? I don't need to run down the litany of things that I've seen on the internet. This is about as bad as it gets. You know, obviously the obvious, you know, some of the things that you might see. But I thought I was watching an attempted murder. Raja Jackson goes in there. He picks Stu up, who clearly is letting him. They're thinking, oh, this is going to be part of the show. And he drops him. And when he slams him, he's already pretty much unconscious. And then Raja proceeds to hit him with 21 unanswered, not just punches, haymakers. Wide, wide shots that connect on the jaw. He is completely unconscious, and he repetitively just over and over and over again pounds his face into the mat, and it is it's terrifying. And Rampage opened his mouth and tried to make an excuse that, like, his son was concussed and that, you know, my boy, you know, he's under a lot of pressure. And it's like, dude, your boy is facing a potential attempted murder charge. He hasn't been arrested yet, but the entirety of the internet wants to see accountability here, and I for one do as well. Like, I mean, it's as cut and dry as it gets. Like, this has nothing. I mean, even with a good lawyer, I don't, it's maybe something to talk to Justin Watkins. I don't know how you get out of this one. It's all on tape. It was all pre-recorded. It was all streamed on Kick. You laid out your intent. You even said that you knew it was fake and that you knew, you know, but you're still going to go out there and get your seat. It's all really bad. It's really bad for the Jackson family, Raja, Rampage, and obviously Stu and his family. And really, honestly, Steve, it's horrible for pro wrestling. Pro wrestling, you know, is a carny business, and this just makes it look even more ridiculous than it already is.
Ryan McKinnell's with us. All right, we got to close on another carny business, and that is sometimes the Sanders family. And yeah. I've seen the Shadora Maniacs have just been going crazy the last couple of weeks. So give me your general take. He did not play well in game three of the preseason. Then they moved on Kenny Pickett, as I predicted. They were never going to keep four quarterbacks. So now it's Shador and Gabriel and Flacco. I think he's being given a golden opportunity here. How does this work out this year? What's the end game here? How does it play out for Shador Sanders?
Well, I'll tell you what. I think you can end all the conspiracy talk just right off the rip that the Cleveland's out to get him or the league's out to get him. They are employing him. He is a third-string quarterback on a team where he gets more attention, press, and conversation than most first strings, right? I don't throw my Caleb Williams in there because Caleb is certainly at the top of the food chain in terms of, you know, media attention and the eye and the gaze of journalists or not journalists in some cases, right? But Shador is a fascinating case for so many reasons. I love his dad, Deion Sanders, one of my favorite players of all time. Loved what I saw from him in Colorado. I did, you know, the retirement of the jersey. And so there was writing on the wall of, like, what exactly are we seeing here? Because, like, there's stuff that's like indefensible, right? Like the jersey that I can't defend that. That's insane. Like, what are we doing? I don't, the worship of Shador is a little concerning, but I also, I mean, we live in 2025 and like idol worship and sports worship and athlete worship and branding and marketing. He's the son of Deion. Some of it I get, but when you have the tape and people are literally just showing you like, look at how long he holds onto the ball, right? Look at his drop back. Look at his progressions. If he just steps up in the pocket, he would have protection. He would be able to get rid of the ball, right? He a lot of simple things that he doesn't seem to be in a good habit of, right? And that would, you know, common knowledge would suggest that's why you would be a backup, a second or third string. You still have to learn the system. You still have to learn how to play in the NFL. But clearly the Browns feel like there is that potential in him, and they're keeping him on the team despite, again, just so much negative attention and a negative gaze. Like, I think, you know, as long as Shador can keep his head together, and he does seem to be a really mentally sound. I mean, we saw that on draft night. Like, he didn't lash out. He didn't have anything too crazy come of draft night despite falling and falling and falling and falling and being the talk of every single, I feel like, hour of when that draft happened, right? Like, if he can hold his head and get through a couple years of the NFL and maybe get a shot somewhere else, I mean, maybe it happens with the Browns. I don't know. But it's a long road ahead for Shador Sanders. But I think, again, there's no reason why he can't get his nose to the grindstone and get through this and potentially have a really nice NFL career if he learns the right way and if he progresses in the right way. Or again, we were talking about this through the lens of mixed martial artists, right? And UFC fighters. Like, someone was talking about practice squad players this week, and I just tweeted out, I was like, if you're on a practice squad for the NFL for 6 or 7 years, you make more than 99.9% of UFC fighters ever, right? If Shador Sanders is a backup in this league for 10 or 12 years, like, he is going to make dumb money and have a really great life, and, you know, it might not be exactly
right. I think Chase Daniel made like $35 million, yeah, and the guy took maybe 100 snaps in the NFL over 13 years.
Yeah, and now he's a great job. I think he just got signed at ESPN today, so good for him. Like, yeah,
you know, he turned that into a TV career where he's gonna make more, probably even more money.
And you know why he's a name? Because everyone's like, holy crap, I mean, $35 million as a backup. This guy's great. Like, he's like an everyman. Don't think that doesn't play into the fact that he is accepted on an ESPN desk, right? He's not Tom Brady. He's not Terry Bradshaw. He's not Tony Romo. He's nothing. He's Chase Daniel. Mean that with respect, Chase Daniel, but you are nothing. You are a career-long backup, right? But you made a bunch of money, and people love talking about you, and he is really good at his job as an analyst. So I don't want to take that away from him. It's just, it is fascinating. Shador can definitely, if he keeps it together and keeps his brand tight, and like, he has a likable story like a Chase Daniel and comes in here and there and is part of different teams, Shador Sanders can be on TV for 20 years making a ton of money.
I, by the way, I shortchanged Chase Daniel. He made $41.8 million over the course of his career.
Hey, can we take the change? Hey, me and you from 35 to 41. Oh, that's $6 million. Just me and you split it. I'll take three. You take three. We never have to hear Steve from us again, Steve-O.
No greed at all. There he is, my guy, Big Mac, Ryan McKinnell. Have an awesome week. Check him out on Twitter. Combat sports expert. Really great takes on sports in general. We'll talk to you, buddy. Good luck to your Irish.
Thanks, Steve. Good talking to you.
There he is, Ryan McKinnell. We are up against it as we got the Dan Mullen radio show coming up in an hour. Thanks to Battleborn Injury Alerts for housing the show today, for Alex, for Griffin. It's Cofield. We'll talk to you soon. Listen in an hour or so. Dan Mullen radio show live at Parkway Tavern, 215 and Flamingo. Come out and see us. $2 on the Miller Lights during the show. Lots of prizes, special guest, Hunky Cooper, and AD Eric Harper.